You're listening to the Bird Dog Babe Podcast with my mom, Courtney Bastion.
If the wire hair is making a move like nobody's business, well then by golly, stand up in your saddle and watch this. Sometimes maybe the Weimaraner or the Vizsla tail wasn't 12 o'clock, but that thing sure had a nose and went to the right places and used the wind and handled. Well, then by golly, they're the best bird dog. You know, it's not always about style. I like style and I want to own style. But I'm not going to, you know, whatever the most puzzle pieces that dog brought to the table and put in front of me the day that I judged it is how I judge them.
Hey, bird dog babes. My name is Courtney Bastion, and I am obsessed with all things bird dogs. And I'm here with you to share the stories, experiences, knowledge, and opinions from the women and a few guys in the industry that are killing it. I'm a Wisconsin girl living in a Montana world. I'm mom and two incredible kiddos, wife and occasional assistant to a pro gun dog trainer, traveling the U.S. talking about canine nutrition while hunting, breeding, and competing with my German wire hair pointers and Bronco Italianos. As someone who started hunting later in life because I wanted to give my dogs the opportunity to do what they were bred to do, I'm here to help inspire, educate, and connect women to get their bird dogs out in the field and experience a bond like no other. So pour yourself a glass of wine and get ready to be challenged and encouraged while you learn. This is the Bird Dog Babe Podcast. Hey, y'all. I hope you are having an amazing week. I wanted to take a minute to let you know how much I appreciate all the private messages and emails. Your support and knowing how much you're enjoying this content has been pretty dang amazing. I'm stepping up the game a bit to help those of you that have been asking for advice to be able to provide that on a more personal level. I'll be using the Patreon platform to do so, and I'm excited to kick off this week with that content. One of my patrons asked about our conditioning program, which is perfect timing because we're currently, I think, about 14 weeks out from season opener on September 1st. And many of us are also gearing up for tests and trials that will be starting back up soon. William and I will be going in depth on the conditioning program that we use with our personal and client dogs, in addition to several other important considerations of the process. So don't miss out. Go to patreon.com/thebirddogbabe. $5 per month and you will be in it. If you compete in AKC or American Field Horseback Field Trials, you probably know my guest today, Meredith Mays. Meredith fascinates me as a woman who travels across the country that runs a business as a highly sought-out, reputable horse wrangler. She's a well-known judge with the honor of judging 7 national championships to date. She's a top scout, campaigning top field trial dogs, all while momming 4 kids as a single mom. I connected with Meredith several years ago through horses when I learned what a massive heart she had. I couldn't wait to hear her story because I just knew it had to be good. Meredith shares her insight on how she picked her current top pointer as a puppy, tips for being a good scout, how she is able to travel across the country combining her passion of dogs and horses as a business, competitor, scout, and judge. Meredith also shares her feelings on the hot topic of running dogs in juvenile stakes. All right, let's get after it. Thank you to sponsor Dakota 283, unparalleled protection for traveling to and from your favorite hunting spot. Dakota 283 kennels are a premium quality roto-mold with recessed handles on top for convenient and safe tie-down, and makes it easy to lift up into the truck. I love the secure door frame with high security lock, so I know my dogs are safe when I need to stop for fuel. An added bonus is the drain hole in the back, which makes cleaning a breeze when your dog has been run hard and put away wet. Head over to Dakota283.com and enter promo code BIRDDOGBABE for a 10% discount through the end of June. All right. Today we are talking with Meredith Mays. How you doing, Meredith?
I'm good. Thanks. And you?
I'm excellent. And you're coming from, where are you? You're in Kansas right now.
Right now, yes. I'm actually driving into Kansas from Missouri.
But you live in Pennsylvania? Is that right?
Yep. In Butler, which is just north of Pittsburgh.
Okay, cool. And what are you doing in Kansas right now?
I am on my way to pick up the newest addition to my string of field trial dogs, and it's a an 8-week-old English setter puppy.
Fun. Very fun. So you have, give me a little walkthrough here. You have, is this going to be your first English setter, or have you had that breed before?
Will be my first English setter.
Okay. And so you currently have German Shorthair pointers and English pointers?
Yes. Okay. And then Australian Shepherd.
Okay. Perfect. And so what's bringing you to get an English setter?
I do a lot of judging back east. And one of my favorite dogs that I really like to judge is a dog called the Islander. And I mean, I'm a big fan. If I see him at trials and he's not running under me in judgment, or even if he is, I'll go and visit him on the string. And the dog just, I mean, he's just the sweetest love bug. And I had mentioned to the fellow that owns him that, you know, meeting that dog would make you think about getting an English setter. And he said, well, you know, I'll make that a possibility for you, you know, if I have a litter, blah, blah, blah. And so I thought it was a joke, actually. And lo and behold, he had litters of puppies. And he said, you know, you can have your pick, top pick of any litter. What, you know, what do you want? And so to me, I was like extremely flattered. And how do you turn that down?
Right.
So.
Right. And so you found, so what made you choose this litter that you're getting one from?
Of the two litters that he had, I looked at both of the parents. I mean, I know the father, but on the mother's side, I wanted a field bred dog, something that was really fancy, not a show type English setter. I want an American field type setter. So of the two kids that were born, I liked the female, and then the breeder that has the dog, had sent me lots of pictures of them as puppies, and we went through their temperament, and then, you know, I wanted to see them all in a wing, and I picked this one out of 20 puppies.
Wow.
So, he's a good, I think, I mean, I'm pretty sure, you know, if nothing else, he'll be a great companion, too, but, right. I mean, I want to see a dog, so that's what I'm hoping I'm getting.
So, and you haven't met the puppy yet? Or how did you choose the puppy out of all of them?
Pictures and videos.
Okay, so he sent you videos of them too?
Yes. And what was actually kind of funny is the one that she thought that I would like, I absolutely, nope. So this other one, he's just more, he's fancier. He's got a straight 12 o'clock tail already, and that was at 4 weeks old, point in the wing. He's independent. You know, he doesn't need his brothers and sisters to hang out with him, but he's also a very kind puppy. The one that she thought that I would like was like a big Nana Boo Boo hanging on your feet, and his tail was real long and curled. And I mean, I really do not know a whole lot about English setters, but I know what I like to see out in the field, and that's kind of what I was picking by this puppy.
Well, that's exciting. I'm excited to see how you like the English setters compared to the other breeds that you have.
And I am as well. I mean, I really like watching them. Mm-hmm. I know that they are a bit softer. The one pointer that I have is a big, super, super soft baby. So, you know, I mean, I think it's kind of neat because I've been working, you know, with him and he's not like a typical pointer, and he's definitely not like the short hairs at all. So, I don't know. We'll see. I really want to just kind of be a well-rounded type of dog person. So, I've had a lot of bird dog breeds over, you know, my course of 47 years in existence. So this will just add to the list of dogs.
Yeah.
Meredith, what do you have on your string right now?
I have my first short hair that I've had as a field trial dog. And then I have the English Pointer and then now this English Setter.
Okay.
I've had a lot in different dogs over the past, and I've been field trialing now for since 2007. But I didn't get my first dog until 2012, only because I was kind of watching and learning. And you know, I think it's better to kind of understand what you want to do and get your feet wet that way. But I've had several short hairs. I've had the Pointer and his mother and litters of pups. But I want to be able to concentrate on them and not have like 30 dogs that you don't get to do anything with. No,
right.
A few good ones.
Right. Is that typical that you have about three, or do you sometimes have more than that?
I've had nine.
Okay.
At a time, and then just kind of weed through them, figure out what you want, or figure out what is the best situation for the dog. I've had retrieving. I have had a Gordon Setter. I've had a Vizsla, and these are, you know, all in the past, but all the bird dogs, I just really more so concentrate on who's gonna bring home the bacon, who's gonna be the dog to beat.
Right. So Meredith, the reason I wanted to have you on this podcast is because you are juggling, you're a wrangler, you're a trainer, you're a breeder, you're a scout, and you're a judge. And from what I know, you've been able to do pretty amazing at all of those things. So can you tell us? Well, you should be, because you're killing it, girl. So tell us about your story. I want to know how you got into bird dogs, how you got into the horses. Bring us back to it.
If I go back even funnier in a further way, all things happen for a reason. We just never know what they are. I mean, we choose our paths and we choose the directions that we want to go. I mean, all as a child, and I grew up in the city. I did not have horses. The neighborhoods that I grew up in were house beside each other, piled on, busy streets. You couldn't just roller skate up and down the street. There was so much traffic. And I was not allowed to have a dog. We had cats in my family. I have two younger sisters, one of them of which, interestingly enough, is married to Dweezil Zappa, but that's neither. That was just a plug. So of the neighborhood, I spent a lot of time with everyone in my neighborhood's dog. And I used to put on dog shows for all of the older people in the neighborhood. And I mean, I had Brittany she was a great Frisbee dog. There was a Siberian Husky that I taught all these crazy cool tricks to. And 10 dogs, I'd have them sit, stay, do tricks, and I connected more with the animals, and that was mostly because I always wanted horses, but these dogs were the next best thing that I could have at the time. And so when I finally did get into horses, that's what I wanted to be, was a horse trainer. And all through high school, I never had my own horse till I was 16, and I saved money and bought one. But very long story short, the funny part about this, my whole story, as you call it, is that I actually had a full ride to go to Penn State for veterinary college. And I decided that I wanted to be a horse trainer. So the day after I graduated high school, I packed up my stuff and I moved to Kentucky. I had no
idea where I was going, what I was going to do. I did not have a picture-perfect childhood, and I actually had moved out of my house when I was 16 and was emancipated from my family because, I mean, we all have baggage. But at any rate, so when I was 18 and I could move, I did. And I drove down to Lexington, Kentucky, and I found a job on a horse farm. That was with American Saddlebred Horses and worked for some of the top trainers in the country. Went out on my own, and I have been doing horses professionally since I was 18. Along the way, I tried to do a couple of different things that were probably more suitable for making money or providing health insurance. But, I mean, I would always come back to the path. I never left training horses. I've always done it and always came back to the path of training horses. So, in 2007, I won 4 national championship titles with 4 different breeds of horse, which does not happen when you're talking in totally different circles of horse training. And that from there, I was kind of like, well, you know, what do you have after that? You know what I mean? The next year is not going to be as good, and it's not really going to logistically going to be better. And I ran into a fella that was looking for a Tennessee walking horse for field trialing, which I had never heard of. So when he explained to me what he wanted, I went and found the walking horse, and I had it doing all the things that he asked for to do, and he bought it, and then he took it to a field trial, and that was it. People wanted to know where that horse came from. Wanted to know, you know, who was I? And so then that just started. They wouldn't let me go to a field trial for several years because, as we know, and I understand now that these are a working animal, and sometimes you can see a little bit of ribs on the top. And I'm a big advocate about taking care of your animals, and that's a reflection on you. And that's how you and I got into meeting and such. But so on field trials, you know, the horses are a lot leaner than I would usually see, and they didn't want me to get myself in trouble by cussing some people out.
Okay. So I'm sorry, I cut in there. So tell me about when you got started in the gated horses and you were taking them to the trials then. That's when you went to a trial for the first time?
Yes, I had. There was a wrangler in Maryland named Arnold Treadway, and he had passed away. And I had been to a few field trials down in Virginia and such where this person was, the wrangler was there. And I could not get over how unsafe the animals were that he was putting these people on. And, you know, as an outsider looking in and being, I mean, I instructed junior exhibitors and adult riders to top level of competition. I used to do 80 riding lessons a week, and your horses are your safety net. I mean, you've got to have solid individuals. Things happen. People fall off. I mean, what goes up must come down. But at this field trial that I had attended, like probably the third one I had been to, I could not get over how bad the horses looked. B, their bridles were put on with baling twine. The saddles didn't fit. People were falling off. And in my head, I just thought, you know, how can somebody sleep at night knowing that they're putting these people on these animals? And I had, I was standing there. I was not about to ride one of those horses. I actually had a horse of mine that was kind of a project horse. I wanted to see if he would work out for that type of a situation. And Arnold, the person came over and opened the horse's mouth and squirted yellow solution in his mouth and turned around. He said, well, two cc's of ace will do this horse right. And I didn't even know what that meant. But when I did some more research, I was flabbergasted that they're drugging the horses. Mm-hmm. So Arnold passed away like December 30th. And his girlfriend called me out of the blue and said, hey, you know, I had heard you were thinking about doing some wrangling. Would you like to buy all of the horses and all of the equipment? It would be a really good way for you to And I mean, I did not want the horses, but they were all skinny. Oh, and they were all sad. And their feet were horrible. And they had, so in my head, I shouldn't have, but I did. I bought 21 head of gated horses from, from them. I made several trips to Maryland to get them brought back to my place and just weeded through all of the horses. And honestly, there was only one good one.
Wow. And they were all gated.
Everything was gated. Yes.
And when was that? How long ago?
I am thinking it's gotta be, I think it was 2011.
Okay.
It would be because I didn't end up acquiring the short hair that I still have, and he was born in 2012. So, I mean, I bought 21 head, and I mean, I got all the saddles, and honestly, not one, I do not have one single saddle. They were all the Canadian, or the cavalry mounted, you know, the cavalry saddles, and they were put on with baling twine, and I don't know how stuff didn't break. And I mean, some of the horses were just used up. A few of the good ones I did end up using and selling to other people over time. I mean, there's a great one of them in Ohio. There's some really good ones here, there, and everywhere. But so with this whole group, then I started wrangling. So because the trials didn't have him anymore. And I went ahead and picked up where he left off. But I really believe, and people have told me, so it's not just, you know, me being kind of pompous, that, I mean, the trials were just so thrilled to have somebody that I don't put people on stuff that's going to kill anyone. I don't put people on stuff that's going to bolt, buck, rear, spin, spook, do anything bad. Mm-hmm. I ride them myself. My 15-year-old daughter goes to some of the field trials with me. I have a lot of clients at home that bring friends to go trail riding and will put their friends on these horses. I mean, the horses that I take to field trials and rent as a wrangler are freaking safe.
How many horses are you typically taking to trials?
I'll take, depending on the size of trial, between 6 and 10. The national events, I'll do 18 to 22 head.
Okay.
I need them to not be tired. You know, I like them to not be worn down. I don't want my horses to be skinny. I don't, you know, I mean, I really do take a lot of pride in my animals being horses that are safe, sound, smooth, and well-behaved, and they help people get the job done. I mean, let's face it, the animals are really only a tool to field trialers when they need to rent them. They're a tool to the judge to ride around when you can't be following these dogs with quads. I mean, they're a tool for a scout to be able to get up and go find a dog. I mean, they are only tools, but I want my tools to be the best.
Right. And they have to be reliable because if, especially with handlers that aren't having their own horses, they're probably not the most confident or experienced rider.
Absolutely correct. Mm-hmm. Yes, you're absolutely correct. So I want my horses to be point and shoot, pull back to stop, put your hand forward to get, you know, and I really can honestly, I mean, I really got to think in my head how many people have been unhappy. I really have to think in my head as to how many people have ever complained about any of things. You know what I mean? And that was my goal. My goal was to supply people with this, because if you don't have the right tools, you can't go in and have fun and do your job. You know, I've had pros that, you know, maybe they had a vehicle breakdown and they just had to get the dogs to the trial, and then they needed one of my horses, you know, and so there are sometimes a necessity. And so that's kind of, I mean, that's how it all got started. And so, I do a lot of training of the gated horses, but I don't really do much training of anything else that isn't gated now. And that was not the case. I mean, I had saddlebreds, Arabs, half Arabs, national show horse, Friesian, Morgan, Hackney ponies, and just do some, you know, regular breaking of things, but it was all show horses. And so now I don't have any, I don't have any of those anymore, which is kind of crazy.
When you're getting new horses in as prospects, what is it, what are the most important things that you're testing them for? Being around dogs, shooting, what else?
I need a horse that's forgiving. Because
okay.
A lot of the people that I supply horses for, as you, and you're absolutely right, they don't know how to ride. And so you can't have a horse that's going to be all really upset or irritated by the rider giving the wrong command or jerking on their face or kicking them too hard. Because mm-hmm. a lot of times, new handlers, young people, people that don't know how to ride, and even people that are more fearful than they ever want to admit to, mm-hmm. will give an animal the wrong signal. And I want them to be forgiving. I want the horse to go, oh, you know, okay, you were pulling on me and kicking. I'm going to think that you want me to go. Whereas some horses that will fry real quick will start doing some really bad, dangerous habits. I mean, rearing is when they just stand up on their hind legs and their feet are up high, like high, you know, like Silver and Lone Ranger. And you know, I don't want that. And riders can accidentally teach a horse to do that because they're giving them the wrong cues. And so I want mine to be less reactive and very forgiving.
Okay. There's so many things that you have to go through that is so beyond just regular horse training because of what you're doing. I mean, you need sound with your horses.
And a lot of the things too is people, when we compare a horse and a dog, and you know this, but dogs wake up in the morning like we as humans, and because we're a predator by nature, we stretch our arms and we yawn and we look around and we go, I wonder what I'm going to have for breakfast. Well, a horse wakes up really quickly in the morning, if they even slept at all, and looks around and says, oh my gosh, I hope I'm not breakfast. So you're dealing with two totally different mentalities. I hear people, and I love when they come to me and they're, you know, they want a horse, and they'll say, and it's almost always men, they'll say, you know, I rode this horse one time, and you know that some buck, he knew I didn't know what I was doing, and he was a jerk, and he done took off, and he rubbed me off on a tree. That horse was a butt. Well, I laugh because that's not how horses think. If you're scared and you're not piloting the ship, you're not the pilot, you're not the captain of the ship. Well, a horse's instinct is to be safe. And where do they go? To the trees. So if you're not going to be, it just makes me laugh because horses really aren't overall mean, nasty, conniving. They do not have the thought process to literally go out of their way to try and hurt you. But because we're fearful and because people as humans give them the wrong command, they usually always do what the person's telling them to do, but it wasn't what they wanted. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, there is so much. I mean, you can work them at home, get them used to dogs, guns, the whole nine yards, and then you take them to a field trial and their brain can still spin off. I mean, they can still really have just not be able to settle into the routine. And I've also actually by accident several times taken one that was just an absolute hyper mess at home and take them to a field trial and they melt right into the situation because there's so much going on that the horse thrives on it.
Sure.
I love to use a horse that's an alpha, and an alpha horse is very bossy. They're very assertive. They can be very aggressive toward other horses, not humans. But I find that an alpha horse, because they're in the pecking order trying to be the boss, they're typically the best horses for this game because they'll get up, they'll go out, and they'll go do their thing. They'll just go do it.
And you're in horse sales as well. So, I mean, how are you able to keep a good, solid string of horses as a wrangler when people are riding them going, this thing's amazing and I want to buy it now?
Well, I have got myself backed into several corners by doing that. But now at this point, I just say, you know, one of my best horses is $10,000. Now, theoretically, that's a stupid amount of money to pay for a horse, but that's what it's going to take for me to let go of them. And so I'm always making new horses. I'm always picking them up. And I do a lot of breeding. I decided to do some breeding because I was very, very tired of going out, looking through, buying, purchasing, picking up horses, trading for this horse, for that horse, this apple to that orange, and getting a bunch of stuff that has a lot of baggage. With dogs, you can retrain a dog. You can retrain a dog to do things that, you know, maybe one handler or one trainer or one pro kind of messed up. You can retrain that dog. You can't retrain a horse. In my opinion, I feel that you have to untrain them. And there are some different, there's some different habits that they have that I just, I mean, honestly, if I have one that has made a bad decision, so like, let's say the horse popped up one time somewhere because it didn't want to do something, that horse is gone. Mm-hmm. I will not take it and use it because that horse, in my opinion, will use its baggage when you need to call on it or you need to get it to do something. It'll pull that bad tool out of its toolbox and use it. And you just can't have that. I can't have that. So mm-hmm. I started doing a lot of breeding. I have my own mares. They're all field trial mares. I've had several different stallions here and there, and I keep them for their brain and their smooth and their size, their bone. But most of all is the thought process between their two heads. I mean, we all want a pretty horse. But give me something that thinks good and does what anybody asks it to do, and I'll take that. I will take that over anything else all day long. So breeding, raising my own babies, breaking them, using them, turning around, selling them is another way of creating income. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy it. And I don't know. I just think it's kind of cool. I mean, you've got your own baby. I mean, it's just so neat to watch them grow, and it's like a palette. Just like with the dogs, you pick out a puppy and you watch it grow. So,
You do horse rescue as well. So, how you and I kind of formed a closer relationship around the horses. It's been, what was it, September of 2017?
Yeah. 17. And it was September 23rd.
Wow, you know the date. You're good. So you had, before that, you had seen an ad on Craigslist of somebody looking to sell. How many horses was she looking to sell?
It sounded like there was close to a dozen.
Okay.
And I mean, the object of the game is to buy low and sell high. Mm-hmm. You got to make a living. You got to polish, I call it polish these turds or make a silk purse out of a sow's ear, however you want to say it. You've got to be able to turn over an income. So what she wanted for the horses was a lot more than I was even going to be able to get for these things on the market because they were all young. There were some neat colors. She would not send me photographs. And that's fine. I'm not going to drive 2.5 hours for the heck of it just to go by. If you tell me it's 16 hands, I'm going to assume it's 15-2. I mean, I really have never seen a 16 hand horse when people tell me, and that's the hands are measured by every 4 inches is how you measure how tall a horse is. So
why is that? Did people typically want taller horses? Is that why they round up?
I think because it's usually men and they overestimate the size of everything.
Okay.
So when I say, you know, I'm looking for a tall horse, oh yeah, this horse is every bit of 16 hands, and I've never gone to get one or look at a horse that really was the size that they told me. Interestingly enough, but so the woman had called me, had texted me, and then she finally sent some pictures, and these pictures were from the summer when the trees were in full bloom and the grass was really high and the horses looked okay. And I still wasn't gonna meet her at her price. And to make a very long story short, she had texted me on and off a couple times, and then she said, out of the blue, in a text, I'd tried to call her and I would never be able to get her on the phone. Now, sometimes cell things, phone signals are stinky. So that could have been, I don't know. Anyway, she texted me, and I didn't even know if it was a man or a woman. Hey, you can have all of these horses, but I need you to come and get them today. And I thought that was super duper strange. So very long story short, I had I have four children. So the two youngest were with me in the truck and we hooked up the trailer and I hung hay bags and I went to this place and it was one of the worst situations I have ever seen. And there were seven of some of the thinnest animals that were just so, I mean, they were so thin that it was so hard to believe that skin could stretch over bones like that without protruding through the top. And there were two dead horses in the pasture laying there dead, like bones sticking through hide, dead. And when I pulled up to the horse, she had me pull up to the barn and back into the arena, and she acted like nothing was wrong. Nothing was wrong. And we went into the barn area, and the horses had eaten all of the wood in their stalls. And there was only metal bars and metal sides of the stalls where the brackets held the wood. That was the only thing that was there. And there were disgusting, skinny, gross dogs covered in ticks and chickens running around without feathers. It was like, whoa. You can't compare it to the Holocaust because there's no such comparison, but it was the worst situation I'd ever seen. And when they started bringing the horses, the whole time in my head, I'm thinking, how am I going to feed these things? Like, how am I? And they got on that trailer. The one horse literally, no lie, broke away from the daughter who was probably 200 pounds overweight, which also was irritating to me. And the horse got on the horse trailer and fell. And as the horse loaded itself, fell down on the ground and started eating the straw and the sawdust that was in the bottom of my horse trailer. Now I have a 4-horse slant. So you really wouldn't typically stick 7 horses in, but they were so thin, it didn't matter. They loaded themselves. There was a baby, a 6-month-old baby, a 6-month-old baby. And these horses were so skinny, and I brought them home, and I had my vet meet me to make sure that, you know, I didn't have the thought process that they could be carrying any diseases, but I also didn't want to bring something wrong into my barn. And I also didn't want one single soul on earth to think that I would ever leave an animal in such condition. And that's, you know, I kind of wanted him to document this. Right. And I did. I took pictures of them inside, outside, upside down, and put it on Facebook because I was reaching out for someone, anybody, you know, maybe they wanted a project. I wasn't looking for money. I was not. But that first initial visit with these horses was $800. And I was just thinking, my gosh, I'm trying to save them because I don't know what was going to end up with the situation. But I mean, these horses needed help. They were eating each other's manes and tails to survive.
Right. There was not only food, but if I remember right, you had said they didn't even have water in there.
No. They did not have water, and they drank, and they drank, and they drank. And it was really crazy because as soon as they were drinking, they were automatically like brightening up. The one horse, we had to take the salt block away from her because she was eating it. She was so hungry. And you have to start them in a very slow refeeding process. You have to be careful. I mean, you want to do everything that you can for them in the beginning, but you could end up killing them. The one mare was a really lovely little black mare. She choked 7 times in a row right away because she was so freaking hungry. Her stomach was so empty, she couldn't make saliva to eat. And turned out she was only a 4-year-old.
Terrible.
She was a young baby. The nicest one of all that everybody was fighting over is the mare that you ended up with, that buckskin. Mm-hmm. Everybody loves buckskin colors. And, you know, mm-hmm. you know, well, I'm getting these animals that I don't know if they're broke, but I will say that almost all of them had saddle sores. And the one horse had saddle sores so bad on her backbone, it had maggots growing in it. You could see her spine.
So they were riding them.
Yes. The one that choked and fell on the horse trailer had new sweat marks on it because they went on their last trail ride the afternoon before I arrived.
That is so upsetting. Yeah, it's so one sick. Thing. Like, it is. You can't afford to feed horses. You know, it sucks. It's awful. It happens. You find a way to do it. But it's pure laziness to not give them water. And it's just pure abuse to ride an animal and make them work in that condition. It was upsetting.
And it didn't happen overnight. This didn't just happen. You know, one of the times that I had tried to do something better for my family, I raised four kids on my own. I mean, I'm a single mother. So at one point I had gone and I got a really good job at a youth juvenile detention home. It was a group home for criminal teenage adolescent female girls that had been placed in a group home situation because they were bad. You know, they'd done something that was illegal, all different realms. But my whole point in this is what I'm saying is that I always want to help. And I don't know what it means psychologically, but I mean, I'll pick up lost dogs on the side of the road because I'm afraid they're going to get hurt. I mean, these are not the first horses I've rescued, but it just always makes me so sad and so angry. Animals, children, things that are being neglected or abused. It really just, I mean, I want to change and I want to fix it. I want to make them better. And those seven, that was just so sad to have seven that were so starved. The one that looked the best was the one that you actually ended up with. And that was because she was freaking pregnant.
Right.
Pregnant.
Which you didn't
in that
tell.
Scenario.
Which we didn't know. We didn't know.
No, all of the mares were pregnant except for one. Yeah.
Oh, really?
You know,
Wow. I didn't realize that. Yeah. Cause it was, I think right after you posted it, all the pictures of them, we had four horses, like a couple months before that, and we had sold two because we knew we were moving and we only had a two horse trailer, so it was our way to be able to make the move. And then I was actually working at Purina Farms when I saw your post of it, and my husband was going to be leaving the next day for Mingo in Ohio to take our dog Carmen to the NAVDA Invitational. And I think I wrote you before I wrote him, and I said, I'll take that puck. I hope he doesn't listen to this. Oh my gosh. I mean, honey, I talked to him first and then I talked to you, but,
that's
but
right.
No,
that's right. You said I talked to my husband and
Yep. That part was there for sure. But yeah. So, and then I asked him, I said, can you take the horse trailer with you? He's like, no, he's got all the nerves, everything on his mind. He's like, no. And I'm like, no, you have to do this. There's this, all these horses and Meredith needs help. He's like, is she even rideable? I go, I have no idea. That's not the point. We need to get her. We need to help. And so, he took the horse trailer out, and you know, Mingo Grounds, like that crazy driveway that goes up there.
It's like going up the side of a mountain. Yep.
Terrible. And he ended up like tipping the trailer a little bit and a tree went through. It was a mess. But he ended up meeting you the next day, got her.
I do thank you for donating all, you know, you donated.
Oh, absolutely.
Financially quite a bit to go through the entire group of horses, and that paid for the vet bill. And a lot of people, I didn't want any funds. I didn't want to benefit from it. I actually had people that had donated money to the feed store so I could get the special feed for the horses to just rehabilitate them. Mm-hmm. Yep. Oh yeah. Yep.
There was so much.
Because they were, it was so sad. There's, I know where all of them are, and I actually still have one. I kept the youngest colt of all of them, because he had some major malnutrition disorders from all that he needed a specific diet. And I didn't want to pawn him off on someone else because people had failed him. The mares were better off. And you guys, you nursed your mare back, foaled her out, and then got on her. And she turned out to be, am I wrong? I mean, she's the freaking dream, isn't she?
Oh my gosh, she's amazing. She's amazing. And we rode her. Actually, I put my husband on her because I was pregnant at the time. But he jumped on her just a couple weeks after we got her home and got her cleaned up and back into health. And we're like, holy cow. And she's gated and
she's little. Smooth.
Yeah. Oh, so smooth. She's 15 hands. She's little. I mean, it's not a horse that, like that he rides normally. She's mine for sure. Cause I won't give her away anymore. Cause she's so fun to ride. But yeah, and then it was just a couple months when I was posting pictures of her progress, and I think you private messaged me and you go,
I did. I was like, oh my God.
I think you need to have her foal checked. And I'm like, what? What do you mean? I think she looks pregnant.
She looks pregnant.
I had two vets come three different times and nobody could confirm one way or the other. And
I
remember
because you're like, no, they said no. And I was like, I really think you need to get a second opinion because I'm telling you, she looks bred.
Oh my gosh. And I was in so much trouble. We went from four to two. Oh my gosh. I was. And like getting the third one, then I had to break it to him and say, so she might be pregnant.
Three and a half?
So much trouble. You have no idea. Oh, anyways, they're both.
You did a good thing. I mean, you did a good thing.
Oh, no, you did the good thing. You did the good thing. And they're amazing. Butterfly, our son, he was 2 years old at the time. He named her Butterfly, which is perfect because she is. She's just a dream. And Peaches is the baby. So
I love that name. Peaches is so cute.
From Ice Age. Gosh.
I know. It's so cute. Very cute. So yes,
That's how we met. Meredith, you have an amazing heart and you're tough. And I love it because you're the perfect mix of this tough woman that trains horses but you have the biggest heart and you are the warmest, sweetest person. And
don't tell everybody. Everybody needs to think I'm a badass. Like I want to be that. I want to be that Xena Princess warrior, not the Mother Teresa nice person.
Yes, sorry.
I need to be feared.
I totally outed you.
Oh, no. You know, what's funny is the personas that we have of people on Facebook, it is really, I mean, you know me more than a lot of the people that I see, but they think I'm a total badass. And it just makes me laugh because I'm like, yeah, sure. That's right. Oh, yeah.
Be feared.
Oh, yeah. And I like to do things that are silly and I love to make people laugh. You outed me, Courtney.
You're fun. I did. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I hope people just continue to fear you and have no idea.
Damn straight, Skippy. That's how it has to be.
All right. So tell me about this dog that you've been kicking some ass with.
You are talking about Double M Smoking Gun. I rescued his mother.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
His mother was a rescue. She was at a farm where I'd sold two horses. And as I pulled in there, I saw one of the most beautiful pointers I've ever seen. I mean, 12 o'clock tail. She's standing there in this big dog run. And I had said, I got out of the truck and I was just enthralled with her. And I said, I cannot believe you guys have a pointer. And they did not abuse her. So maybe rescue is not the correct term, but in explaining, I want you to understand what I mean by that.
Okay.
The dog, her name was Martha, was 5 years old. She was in this big enclosure and it was, all worn down to dirt. She was dirty and just a smelly old dog. And, you know, I was said, I can't believe you guys have this dog. And he said, my best friend from college used to field trial. And they didn't know that I field trialed. And they had, he had a massive heart attack out in Iowa pheasant hunting. And his wife didn't know what to do with the dog. And I love to pheasant hunt. So she gave me the dog. And he said, but we can't hunt with her because every time we put her down, she's gone. And the Humane Society brings her back because they didn't know anything about Garmin location collars. They didn't know anything about electronic devices or, you know, maybe that's a good thing though. But, and he said at one point she was gone for 3 weeks and then she would get brought back to the Humane and would call them. And I was just like, well, how's she bred? Jim is his name. He says, you want her? And I looked at him and he's like, you can have her. In fact, here, I'll go get her papers. And I was like thinking to myself, what am I gonna, sure, I'll take her. Because she looked so sad. We couldn't even catch her. We had to get like a type of a noose around her neck to be able to catch her. And then, you know, then I put her in, because I'm hauling horses. I put her in my horse trailer and I bring her back and I've got a dog I can't touch. I mean, she cowered. I do not believe that they abused her physically. I just believe that she did not have anybody to show her kindness. And so I'll hurry up. My story gets long and I get on sidetracks. But so in my barn, I can shut it up tight to where nothing can come in and out. And I brought her back and I turned her loose. And then she would not come to me. I couldn't corner her. She was getting scared. She wasn't being aggressive, but I just thought, oh, you know, I just got to give this dog some time. I've got to, what did I just do? Like, what is always my reaction? Why did you do that? But so I was calling my cats for their, I feed them in the heated room and kind of do a head count. And I stood outside and was like, kitty, 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 kitty. And that dog ran to me and came right up and just stared at me and I pet her. Mm. Well, her name was Martha, but I changed it to Kitty and she responded. So that was the joke, was like, got a dog named Kitty. But I had a lot of faith in the dog and I sent her to my pro at the time, which was Diane Bader, who I really admire because she's, you know, top female handler in the country. And she's also in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And so being that she was in Pennsylvania, I was like, hey, you know, you want to take this dog and see what you can do. And so she did. She took her out to out west and they were out in New Mexico. And the dog would be 3 miles away and stand on point. I mean, she had the hardest time bringing her in and keeping her broke because the dog had done so much on her own. She didn't think that she needed people. She was not necessarily all age mentality, but she just learned to do things on her own. And she was independent. So Diane said, you know, it's going to be difficult to make her a trial dog. She's very sweet. She now comes to her name. You've got to keep a collar on her. You can't really, you know, just think that she's going to hang around. And she said, why don't you maybe breed her? And I was like, oh, well, I don't know anything about breeding dogs. So to make a very long story short, I was taking my short hair to the Ohio, they have an Ohio championship, and I was going to run him in a derby classic there. And I had her. And the judge that was judging that was Mike Jackson from Indiana. And he would stop and look at her in the kennels. The kennel runs are easy. You have to pass them to go up and down to do anything. So the dogs are always there in full spectacular view. And I mean, he would stop and stare at her. So I knew he liked her. And then in between some of the different running, I was going to take her out and run her with an e-collar and just kind of let her, you know, blow out and have a little bit of fun. And I mean, Mike's a pretty cool guy. He's in his early 70s and he was like, well, what are you going to do with her? And I said, I'm going to go run her. And he said, well, do you mind if I tag along? So he came with me. And when we were all said and done, I ended up with 2 fully trained field trial horses, $750 in my pocket, and first pick of every litter. And he ended up getting the dog from me.
Wow.
And he had to change her name. He had to put double M in her name. So he bred her twice. And the second time, he actually had least bred her with a very famous pointer person called Alan Linder. And Alan, the first breeding that dog, the one that I got, she was okay, but she was not going to be a competitive field trial dog. So she ended up going to a game preserve. And then the second litter, I had pictures of I wanted a female this time. And so I got a liver and white female out of Kitty by a dog that had just won the Pyramid Classic, which was a big derby type American field race they have, or, you know, competition that they have in the Midwest. And it was a dog called Aaron's Wild Justice, who at the time that the litter was being consummated was not, I mean, he wasn't, hadn't done as much winning, but very long story short. So I got the female. And when I met with Mike to pick up the female, he had the black and white male and said, you know, cause he had the puppies were like 4 months old. I think it was like June, July when I finally was able to catch up with him. Cause he was trialing and I was trialing, and they may have been like 6 months old, but anyway. And he said, you know, here's your female. She's beautiful. I mean, beautiful dog. And then he said, I'm bringing you him because, and I guess he already knows me. I don't know what to do with this male dog. I mean, he's not going to amount to a hill of beans. He needs to just find a pet home. You know, maybe your AKC people might like to neuter him and have a pet, but he is not going to be a field trial dog. So all of a sudden I've got my pick of the litter and this black and white male. And so the first time I took them out, which was like 3 or 4 days later, with check cords and a horse just to see what they would do, the male dog would look at me. And if I turned my horse to the left, he would go to the left. If I turned my horse to the right, he would go to the right. He didn't go anywhere, but he paid attention. And the female dog thought squirrels and dicky birds were a lot of fun. I mean, she was kind of a ding dong, but I didn't connect with her. I connected with the male. So I did, I sold her to a very good friend who's still competing and field trialing the female, but the male was just, he was a big, he was huge. A lot of the people at the clubs where I would go were like, what are you, he doesn't go anywhere. What are you going to do with him? Now, that was fine. You know what I mean? They don't have to just put on their sneakers and blow out of the country. And so I sent him with Diane. And the passion that Diane had for his mother, because she really liked her, and the fact that she had suggested that I breed the dog, I think helped. But she also really thought that he was cool. And, you know, had said to me, yes, this is a nice dog. And so I just gave her a full rein to do whatever. Between summer and winter camp, he would come home for a little while and hang out. And, you know, I let him down. I never put him on birds. I think too, with the horse training, if somebody took their horse home and I told them specifically what they were supposed to do with it and didn't do what I asked and they messed up the horse, and that would totally piss me off. So I don't want to do that. I wanted to not do that and be courteous to my pros also. But I mean, the first time she ran the dog, he was never done puppy or derby. And the very first time she ran him was at the biggest pheasant futurity for pointers, which is an American field event in the country. And there were 64 or 68 dogs, all derby dogs. And she ran one. Pros from the East, pros from Connecticut that are all like really big time into the pointer world and pointer, they're known for their pointers. The one family, which were the Tracys, they brought 58 and we brought one. Wow. And the dog tied fourth. And that was his first time ever being run, put down on the ground at a field trial. And it's been I get all teared up. It's been freaking awesome because
how old was he at that one?
That would have been October. See, he would have been, I'm thinking he was a year, 20, 18 months.
Okay.
We never did. I mean, he was broke. He stood broke on pheasants and chucker and quail. And my philosophy is no derby, no puppy derby. She then took him out in the spring of that next year as a fully broke gun dog. And in three, which would be his fourth trial, he was finished. Now, pointers don't have to retrieve, which still makes it nice. But in three trials, he got his first was a 5-point major. His second was a 4-point major. And then he won a 3-point major. He was finished. He had his 10 points. He had over 10 points.
He made it look pretty easy.
Well, and it was 5-point majors. That's a large amount of dogs. And
that's hard to find. It's hard to find those trials.
Yes. And it was at a Brittany trial.
Okay.
Which Brittany's need to qualify big time and heavily to go to their nationals. And they don't like what we call the long tail dogs. They don't want to see them. They don't, you know, and he
typically they have close trials.
Oh yeah. And he won that at a Brittany trial. So that was even like a bigger feather in your cap.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So this year, he was runner up or reserve champion in the AKC Gun Dog in Sunita, Arizona. And that was his 7th trial ever.
That's amazing.
I mean, she
and there were how many dogs entered there?
I wouldn't that much. I know there were the difference between entered and mount run were totally different. I believe is between 58 and 52. I don't know how many had dropped off, but
okay.
And the dogs were not finding birds. He had 4 broke finds. I mean, I'd heard different. He got beat by an English setter, which is, you know, cool. And I mean, there was the best dogs and the best of the best of the best go to this and just drop them out of a box and rock and roll. So
that's huge.
I mean, that's quite a ride. I've handled him twice. The first time I was in Pennsylvania, and I was second. And then I handled him 3 times. I'm sorry. Then I handled him down in Hubbard, Texas, where he and I did not see eye to eye. So I went ahead and brought him home so that I could spend some time with him. And then I took him over into Ohio, and I won a big amateur gun dog stake with him in Ohio. And I'm trying to get him qualified in the American field. So I've got to get him to some amateur shooting dog events because I want to do bigger things. I love AKC and I love the people. I want to be able to do, you know, the bigger things with him with the American field because he is that kind of dog. I mean, I've turned down stupid money, which is the kiss of death, I think. I mean, I turned down $10,000 and $15,000 for the dog.
Wow.
And I bred him, so I don't, you know what I mean? It's like he's been a project. He's a sweet dog. He's so goofy. he's actually very soft. So I give Diane a lot of credit for being able to, tune in to that. He's a nice dog. He is huge. So I'm hoping, you know, he'll continue to have success and be one of those dogs that goes on the map. I mean, I brag about him on Facebook, but at the same time, the people that I've watched him, you know, they hear about this, oh, I got to hear that smoke dog. And then they see him and they're just like, holy crap, you know, how he really is cool. You know, I'm not kennel blind. I mean, I've had horses for forever. Mm-hmm. And you can't be barn blind. You've got to know the stock that you have. It's a lot like Peter and the Wolf. If I tell everybody that every dog I have is nice, nobody's going to think that nobody's going to believe me. But so he's pretty cool. I mean, he's just now just turned 3 January 9th. Unfortunately, with the way that our society has gone with this whole virus, it kind of like put a really big damper on me finishing him American or in the amateur side. But maybe all good things come to those who wait. I don't know. We'll see.
What does he have for amateur points?
I have 5.
Okay.
I have 5. I got a 3 and a 2. So I only need 3 more. And then he'll be, maybe I have 7. I only need 3 more. I can't remember. So that means I do have 7. So, and he only needs 2 more points for his Grand Open Limited. He got 2 points of that for his reserve at the AKC Gun Dog. And then he won a big Grand Open Limited in Texas with Diane. So the 1-hour thing. So, you know, I don't want to overfield trial him. I don't want him to learn to be field trial wise. I don't want him to, he's never caught a bird in his mouth. and kind of want to keep it that way. And hopefully down the road, he'll sire some litters. You know, I want him to be, he's just a neat dog. He's beautiful to watch.
So when you keep, and I haven't seen him yet, but when you keep saying that he's a big dog, he's just bigger in size than you typically see in a field trial for a pointer.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. But he clearly, yes, it's not hurting him running wise or.
No, not at all. Okay. Not at all. And he's not lumbery. His tail is 12 o'clock tail. And you know, remember as kids, we would have the big old flag on the big wheel going down the road. You're riding your bike and that flag is just on the top going left to right. That's his tail. His tail is straight up out of his butt.
Nice.
Just whipping left to right the whole time. It is never down low like a rudder. I mean, he just stands on the chain gang with his tail up at 12 o'clock.
He's just so nice to look at.
Right. And he's a beautiful dog too. I mean, he's got great teeth. He's a handsome dog.
And he's sweet.
Yes. My Australian Shepherds, my two breedy bitches beat on him. I mean, they throw him down on the ground and tell him what for. I mean, it's really funny how they boss him. And he just stands there and takes it. He's not aggressive. Not one bit. He's a really neat dog. He's actually kind of an oaf. A friend of mine, I had him over at his house, and the dog was attacking the sprinklers. It was so funny. And the sprinkler would come around and spray his leg, and he would bark and jump and spin around. It was just such a dorky thing for a dog to do. But he's a neat dog. He's a nice dog to have around.
Yeah. So after you complete his titles, are you going to keep him out to get him campaigned and get him ranked? Yes. Or what's your plan? Yeah? Okay.
Yes. Yes. And what I want to do is the American Field stuff and get to where, you know, I want to be able to pull into Georgia, get him out of the box, and people are like, oh, no, that dog is here. You know? I mean, it's a lot of fun as a female in that world. I mean, we're really not that revered. I mean, I want to do big things with him. I want to be able to, he's not a 3-hour dog, but I want to be able to go to and be asked to go to an invitational. I mean, it's not woman power. I mean, I am not a feminist in any ways whatsoever, but I just, I want to campaign my dog in some deep venue. I don't want to stick around and win a whole bunch of first places at trials where there's only 8 or 9 dogs. I mean, I want to be that dog there in that 72. He's shown me that he can compete in big, big venues. So therefore, guess what? I want to do it.
Right.
I mean, everybody has that once in a lifetime dog. I mean, this is an incredible ride. In just such a short amount of time, I've already got that. So I want to have fun with it. I want to play with my shiny toy.
Oh, absolutely. And he's just beginning right now. What a great age to be able to start that campaign.
Yep. And he's exciting to watch. I mean, he's not a dog that disappoints anyone who's ever seen him. No one is disappointed. Most people walk away with their jaw dragging on the ground. They can't believe how gorgeous he is.
So will you be doing all of his campaigning or will you send him back out?
Nope. I'm going to do it myself now.
You are?
Like I said, I'm going to have fun with my shiny toy.
Cool. And so will you be keeping on with the wrangling business then? You'll just do that along with it?
Yes. What's really cool about the wrangling is that I'm in high demand. So if I go to a trial and I have my dog with me, my expenses aren't any. Right. I don't have any expenses to load up and go. I mean, I've got my entry fee, but I'm already going to be there. I'm already being paid to be at the trial. A lot of times I'm judging. I judge an awful lot. The last time I counted how many different AKC things I've judged, it's well over 100. Well over 100. I think I'm up to 7 breed nationals now.
Wow.
So my point in that is that I can run him to these places, run him during the trials that I'm already going to. So it makes it a lot of fun. And then sometimes I can even, because American Field stuff can be done during the week, I can hit some trials in between my travel. It's a tangled web to weave, but it makes a lot of sense.
And you make a hell of a scout as well. So when you're not judging and running your own dog, I mean, what are some of, I know a couple of the top dogs that you've scouted.
Tell us about some of those. I've scouted the Pointer Nationals. All the ones that are in have been at Mingo. I've scouted the amateur dogs for like 4 years in a row. First champion or runner-up for Angela and Tim Schillerath.
Yeah, with Wayne Yamashita.
Yep, and then the year after, and then Cliff Mesnard was first and runner-up with the Schillerath's dogs as well.
Nice.
I've scouted wire hairs. I've scouted Vizslas. I've scouted short hairs. I've scouted I love to scout.
I think I do.
I love it. It's going fast and furious on a horse, which is a lot of fun.
Right.
But it's also, I'm not handling, but I'm still competing because in my opinion, I mean, you can flat lose it because you don't have the right scout.
Oh yeah.
You can flat freaking lose it. And, this winter I had the opportunity to twice scout for John Rabideau, who is one of the biggest names in the German short hair world. Mm-hmm. And to be able to scout for him and, you know, afterwards, I just want to learn all the time. And I'd say to, you know, was I, he, for someone of his caliber to say to me, honey, you were everywhere you needed to be. And I never had to tell you. And I found his dog standing on point. I mean, I brought them forward and he was just like, I wish you lived down here. I wish you could come down here and, you know, you come to the Nationals and scout for me all the time. Because I think if you know the dogs and if you're judging dogs, you understand what dogs are going to do and you've got to know how to get there and how to do it and how to do it properly. Not run the dogs off, but to bring them forward. And it is a part of it. I mean, really is part of the game. I love the scout. I love it.
Very cool.
I really do.
Yeah. What are some keys to being a good scout? What are some tips for that?
I think, first of all, you need to know how to ride and ride very well. You also need to understand and feel when it is the best time to not keep going after a dog. A dog's, if they'll listen and come with you, I'm not the scout that will go out in front and cheat ever. I am not the scout that's going to stand there and hack the dog ever. I will never, ever, nor have I left someone else's dog. If you're competing and, you know, two dogs at a time and you know your race mate's dog is there, I will help them to the nth degree to get their dog so that their dog is safe. I mean, I've scouted by accident two dogs at a time, purposely, but accidentally in the fact that I was at the right place with the other dog so that I could get that dog because the scout didn't know what they were doing or wasn't in the right place. Or, you know, you've got to have people get your backs, you know. I've scouted for a lot of people that, you know, have said, hey, my dog's so hard to scout. I need you to scout my dog. And that's just so flattering, you know, whether they're just blowing smoke up my butt or not, I don't know. But you've got to know when to get it, where to go, what the dog, you need to try and think of what is that dog thinking so that it is what are they doing? Why did they do that? Why would that dog go that way? And how do you get that dog to come back, come with you, and go and show up in the right place? Because you've got to be in the background. You're the background lighting person. You're the background speaker, stereo person. You're the background music. You're not up there to do a show. You're in the background and you're part of the team that's going to help that handler win with that dog. And to me, being part of the team is even more fun too. I've had lots of angst with not having the right scout over the years. And I just never want to be that person that has to worry about, you know, I don't have the right scout. You know, what am I going to do? Because you can lose it. I mean, you can lose it when you don't have your dog, of course. So,
right. But what makes you really unique and being able to scout all these different dogs and you not having an established relationship with them or knowing what kind of dog, where, how they work a bird, where they run, and the fact that you're able to position yourself and know just dogs in general so well with getting into it, you know, later in the game, it's not like something that you grew up with. It's really cool. You have an amazing sense with animals in general.
Well, thank you. I always say I have super stealth scout skills.
Mm-hmm.
It's like my
absolutely do.
Like, I've never lost a dog.
Wow.
I have never, ever lost a dog. Never. I've always found them. And I've always, you know, I mean, I was scouting a dog for Dave Pomfret in, he's from Virginia, but he was at the Nationals, the Pointer Nationals. And usually that, I mean, when some of the Nationals roll around, I'll get phone calls. Hey, I need to scout for you. Can you scout for me? Can you scout for me? Can you scout for me? Scout every freaking race. So I was scouting for Dave Pomfret, and his dog went through the gallery the wrong way and went back and was pointing on the first bird. And I'm sure he's not in the money, but you never know what happens. I'm going to go get him. And as I got off to get him and I grabbed him by his collar, it broke in a million pieces. So he doesn't have a location collar on, and I panicked, and I mean, I jumped on him. I didn't hurt him, but I jumped on him to get a hold of him with his other collar. And then at that point I was like, you know what? I'm not turning this dog loose. He does not have a location collar on. If he gets lost, that's on me. So I put my rein on him and I took him to the dog wagon. I couldn't leave him there. I wasn't going to turn him loose and let him get lost. I tried to fix the collar and there was nothing I could do that made it to where it looked like it would be safe enough to stay on. So I think that's part of it too, is knowing the right decisions to make. You know, when I'm of the theory that if your dog is bad or my dog is bad, I'm picking my dog up.
Right.
My dog's not going to be doing anything bad and stay down. And so I'll say to the handlers, you know, if your dog's doing something wrong, do you want to know about it? And a lot of times they're like, nope. That's how you sleep at night. That's fine. I mean, you know what I mean? Whatever. So, I don't know. I don't know why it seems like it's not that difficult for me. I can't explain it. I don't know. I can always, if I walk through a field right now, right this minute, if I got out of the truck and walked right through the side of the road on the field, I could find 3 or 4 four-leaf clovers without even looking. They just pop up. I don't know if that's like just the attention that you could pay to detail, or I don't know what it is. But it just seems that's why, like, I can find the dogs. I can see the dogs. I can think about what they're doing. So I don't know. I wish
Pretty
I could
amazing.
Explain that.
Pretty
I don't want
amazing.
To bother and everybody will be like that good. That's just going to be yours and my secret, right?
No. Yep. Everything here is secretive. We have several of those that have been very secret here that are going nowhere.
Woohoo!
Thank you. So tell me how you're doing all of this, Meredith. You're mom and four kids. You're traveling. You're training horses. You're breeding horses. How are you doing it? Tell us.
I am a jack of all trades and a master of none. No, I'm serious. With having had show horses, you have got to be the veterinarian, the blacksmith, the plumber, the carpenter, the nutritionist, the equine sports medicine therapist. You've got your clients to where you've got to talk them off of ledges. You've got to do a little bit of parenting. You've got to do some discipline. You've got to be their marriage counselor. You've got to be their parental guidance. You've got to do so many things and work the horses, pack for horse shows, pack for this, have everything that you need to have to take 24 horses on the road across the country.
Mm-hmm.
That got to be easy. So that high, like running that high, you're getting horses ready for class after class after class, in and out. Everything's got to be I's dotted, T's crossed. Nothing should ever be left unturned. It's just full speed ahead. That was intense. This is actually nothing. Does that make any sense? It's really not that difficult. I rely a lot on my daughter. Yeah, I rely a lot on my daughter. My 15-year-old daughter is really into the horses. My 14-year-old doesn't find them interesting at all. I mean, she can ride. She knows how to ride. She's a very beautiful rider. She's shown also. My oldest next one, Jenny, has her own farm and her own. I now have a granddaughter. It will be one in May. And my son, thank you. My son is in the Army. He is 21. He's in South Korea right now serving our country. And so I have a lot of faith in God also. Mm-hmm. I believe in God. And so mm-hmm. I believe that he helps provide, and that's, like rescuing animals, trying to do things the right way, trying to make decisions and being able to sleep at night. I'm not trying to Bible thump, but I'm just saying I really have a lot of faith in the man upstairs too. So I'd like to think that that has something to do with it. Maybe that's why
he does.
Yeah. I could blow like 7,000 tires on a trip out west and it's funny and I've ripped the fenders off and my truck is overheating, but you know what? I still made it home. Does that make any sense? And people are always asking me, well, do you carry a gun? No, I don't carry a gun. I don't.
But you'll beat them up. You won't have a problem doing that.
Hell yeah. Hell to the yeah.
Not that I know any stories of that happening.
I've actually done that before. So yes, Brian Gingrich. Like how you took that one, you big overstuffed oaf. But how about them apples? So yeah, if they get my craw.
And there's your badass. Don't mess with Meredith.
Yes, I
fear,
but I do always try and do the right thing. I mean, I do.
You do,
and
you absolutely do.
So I think that's what I say. I think that's how I can do it. I've done things that were, really difficult and kept them organized and ran high and hot and hard and just, and now this is just actually, this is not, it's a machine. Mm-hmm.
You must have everything very well organized as well.
I'm going to pretend.
Okay.
If that makes you happy.
In your own.
Is impressive.
Well, maybe in your own kind of organization.
No, I have a girl that works for me that is amazing at organizing.
Oh, like, there you go.
Yeah. Brittany, I'll say, pack my trailer. And she knows what I want, how to do it.
Oh, you got it. See, that's the system. That's how to do it.
Yep. Because I'm like the nutty professor. The nutty professor's desk is a hot mess.
Sure.
I think I was never diagnosed with attention deficit disorder, but I'm sure I've got it. I think that's why. I mean, I cannot sleep very much at all, and I'm fine. I could drive mm-hmm. for 48 hours straight and be fine. I don't know why. Lots of caffeine.
So what's your, what do you have? Coffee? Do you have energy drinks? What do you do?
No. Those energy drinks. I had one Red Bull once, and I thought my heart was going to come right through my chest. Coffee. Okay. I don't like soft drinks. I'm not a big alcoholic drinker. Mm-hmm. Of course, drinking and driving would really be horrible and not smart at all and dangerous. So mm-hmm. that's never anything for me. But no, I don't need a whole lot to make me like, whoa, and be silly. So mm-hmm.
We got so much going on. It probably keeps you on your game.
Oh, there's not enough hours in a day, really. When you have got horses and dogs, there's not enough hours in the day.
Yeah.
So, with kids, you've got two adorable ones. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
I will take either one of them any day. If they want to come to Pennsylvania, I'll drive up there and grab them.
Too funny. So, okay, I have a couple added questions that are just random for you. What's your favorite saddle? What do you ride with that is best for comfort?
I like my Billy Royal Western saddle. It's an old equitation Western saddle, but it just fits my butt and it fits every horse and I feel very safe in it. I am not a fan of trooper saddles. I have them and I use them, mm-hmm. but I prefer a Western saddle for horses if that would be my first choice. I think they're better built for an animal that's a working animal.
Is that what you're putting on your horses that you lease out as well?
Yes. And if the person doesn't know any better, I'll put a Western saddle on. Mm-hmm. If the person requests trooper saddle, and a lot of times the judges, if they don't have their own saddle, they want a trooper saddle. And a lot of times they'll bring their own. Mm-hmm. I have refused different saddles on my horses. I've refused different saddle pads. I've refused different girths. And I've refused different people to ride. Okay. So, I mean, to me, the comfort is the number one thing. It's got to fit. I don't want saddle sores. I can't imagine that they would be comfortable doing a job like that if they're not comfortable. And of course, you know, that can start different habits, bucking, you know, crow hopping, things like that, because they're not comfortable. So I think a Western saddle is a better saddle to use, but to each their own. I'm not going to knock anybody for it.
Okay. What's been the most memorable dog that you have judged? What stands out in your mind of that was the nicest dog I've ever seen?
The Islander, which is the sire.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep. Of English setters. Of pointers, I would have to say my smoke dog.
Okay.
You mentioned her, and I love Carmen. I remember.
Oh, my wire hair?
Yes. I remember Carmen up in, I saw her up in Wisconsin. I believe Adam ran her.
Yeah, he him and Wayne both put her amateur on her. So that's very possible.
Yep. I remember Carmen was braced with my short hair Odie, and Carmen whipped his butt, and he's a really nice dog, and she whipped his butt. And then I believe there was a dog out in Oregon that I had judged out there that was related to Carmen. And I had even remarked, wow, I've not seen a dog this nice, you know, and there's this Carmen dog. And they were like, oh, that's related to Carmen. This dog is, I don't know if it was a daughter or litter mate or something, but it was just really weird how it was all like the same.
Yeah.
You know, the same type of things. So,
cool. Well, thanks.
No, I wasn't looking to hear
about my dog.
I'm not just saying that. I'm saying that it was like really weird because Wayne Yamashita was like, oh, well, this dog was related to Carmen somehow. And you know, everybody has their own things. I love all dogs. I love all breeds of hunting dogs and dogs in general. So I'm really not kennel blind or breed blind. I think finding a good dog.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I totally agree.
Oh yeah. I've placed Gordons over every breed before in big gun dog stakes. I mean, whatever the best dog of that day is, you know, it could have been a Weimaraner. It could have been, I'm not biased, and I don't cookie cutter every dog to look like a pointer. If the wire hair is making a move like nobody's business, well then by golly, stand up in your saddle and watch this. Sometimes maybe the Weimaraner or the Vigeland tail wasn't 12 o'clock, but that thing sure had a nose and went to the right places and used the wind and handled. Well then by golly, they're the best bird dog. You know, it's not always about style. I like style and I want to own style. But I'm not gonna, you know, whatever the most puzzle pieces that dog brought to the table and put in front of me the day that I judged it is how I judge them.
Yeah. I agree. I like to see the dogs, the smart ones out there, the ones making not only looking stylish, but making intelligent moves.
Oh yeah. And not running the road.
Yeah.
Not blowing the handler off.
Right.
You know, they've gone through the cover, bumping the wind. I remember I was in Oklahoma and I was judging this dog, kept cutting back and forth, and the handler was like, get on a line. And I thought, my gosh, your dog is quartering. It was so windy. Your dog is quartering. Your dog's not going to run into the wind, you know? And I even said to the handler later, I said, you know, what your dog was doing, your dog was quartering. I said, have you ever blown in a baby infant's face and they huff because they can't breathe. They stick their arms straight out. It's the same thing your dog would do running into the wind. You can't expect them to run into the wind. They can't breathe. Mm-hmm. And he was like, oh, I never thought of that. It was just those little things, but whatever puzzle pieces that dog brought that fit the best for that day is how I like to see them go.
Cool. You've said that you've judged, what, 7 nationals?
Yes.
So which one was your favorite that just had standout dogs that you really enjoyed that?
Truthfully, I enjoyed the Red Setter Nationals.
Okay.
I mean, it was kind of crazy. The very first race, 30 minutes into it, my judging partner had a stroke over the front of my horse.
No way.
So that kind of like stopped everything, and we had to pull him off and get a new judge. And it was a person that had never judged anything before, but there was nobody else in the parking lot that did it. So Josh Miller and I continued judging. And because my judging partner had been into the hospital, then I took his space and judged the entire freaking thing. So it was like 7 days of sun up to sundown, butt in the saddle, and it was freaking awesome. I don't get tired, and I don't get sick, and I don't get sore of watching bird dogs.
And you loved it.
I loved it.
Okay. What's something that you can share on how to somebody that's new to this? What's a good piece of advice to give them to?
If they want to get into field trialing and they want to do horseback stuff, go take riding lessons.
Okay.
Do yourself a favor. It's not for any other reason other than learning one-on-one is better than getting on a horse and going out in a field trial situation, number one. Mm-hmm. And number two, common sense. I wish we could bottle it and sell it to people. When I see all these different mistakes they're doing with their dogs, like derbying a dog, puppy derby a dog, nothing good will ever come of that. Nothing. Maybe if you want to drop them in one or two, just to give a chance and get a $40 try or pay $40 to donate to the club toward birds or whatever. But if you're going to field trial, do not freaking make one single effort to do puppy or derby for any, I mean, no, that's to me, that is absolutely wrong. And
explain that. Dive into that a little bit. What are your thoughts on that part?
The puppy and derby, the dogs are allowed to run around and catch birds. And it may not be your dog that's running around and catching birds. It may be the dog that you're braced with that's going to run around and catch birds. But that is a lot of pressure on our young dogs. Mm-hmm. And for every bird they catch is another month training that you've got to untrain them to teach them that that was not something that they should have done. And in my opinion, I want a dog that's going to be broke, which means stand still for me to flush a bird, wing and shot. Through the gunshot, they don't let down, they don't flag. Letting them chase, catch, play with, run after birds just instills habits that have to be broken later. So it's better to not even get them started on it.
And I know a lot of people are doing it because it's helping build that competitive run in the young dogs.
I say bullshit on that. I've got a dog that's whipping everybody's ass in the country. He never did puppy or derby. He would not get out from underneath your horse or your feet. That there were so many people that thought that he was not worth a shit. He was not, you know, get rid of him. He's a pet dog. And like literally look at him now. So no puppy derby. Take riding lessons. People always talk about getting, you know, I want to buy a horse. And I tell them, the first thing I tell them is, the horse is the cheapest purchase. Everything after that is more expensive. Saddle, the bridle, the board, the vet bills, the horse trailer, the truck. Make sure you really want to get a horse and make sure you know what you're doing before you just go get one, because they're easy to buy and they're hard to sell.
And there is concern, you know, new people getting into the sport, they're turned off by just the expenses of field trials, because of all the things that you just mentioned. So a great way to be able to play the sport and avoid a lot of those costs is to contact you.
Most of all my horses, everyone can ride. Some of them are a little better at different things that they do. Like some of them are better bird planner horses because they're very lazy, or some of them are better judges horses because they want to be up and out there. But they all come with really good keys. Their keys and their transmissions.
Okay. If we want to know where you're going to be, what your schedule is, what nationals you'll be at, and what horses you have for sale, where can we find that kind of information?
I really prefer the personal touch.
Okay.
I am a perfectionist as far as spelling and grammar and photographs, and it takes me forever to go over all those things. So doing stuff on the web, I mean, I'm just super anal about it. So I would prefer to not do videos, not do all those descriptions, because truthfully, they don't stay at my place very long once they're for sale. I've already got them earmarked for someone else. But if somebody wants something, best thing to do is call me. Call me and I'll tell you, I'm not an email person. I mean, I'm super busy that I would prefer to talk than I would to email, Facebook, that kind of stuff. Plus, it gives me a more personal, you know, I can kind of read you a little bit better, or read the person a little bit better, or ask the right questions so I get the answers that I need to hear better by being on the phone.
And you're very supportive. Yeah, I want to add that. I mean, you're not only honest about what kind of horses that you have, but you're, with what we went through with having the foal, you were amazingly supportive and helpful.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. That's very sweet.
So we really appreciated that.
Well, thank you.
Do you have a website, Meredith?
I don't.
Are the horses, they are, you do have some pictures on Facebook though.
I have more pictures on my personal Facebook page.
Yeah.
I didn't know Facebook only allows you to have 5,000 friends. That's kind of crazy. So in order to friend people, I think I've got to erase some. But I do have Double M Gated Horses page on Facebook also.
Okay.
That I haven't added anything to, but people can message me there as well.
Okay, perfect. Cool. Well, thank you. I really appreciate you taking the time today. I know your schedule is crazy busy and you're on the road and had to pull over for this, so I'm so appreciative of it.
Oh, no. Thank you. Like I said, I'm so flattered.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bird Dog Babe podcast. If you enjoyed this episode and learned something from the content, please share it with your friends. Please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast on whichever platform you're listening from. Check out the show notes for links to references from this episode, as well as info on how to connect through Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. If you're loving this podcast and want to support the production and content, please consider becoming one of my Patreon patrons. Being a patron connects us more on a personal level, where I'm able to help answer questions and give advice. My husband William and I have bred, owned, and trained AKC Master Hunters, Field Champions, NAVDA VCs, and AKC Show Champions. We're excited to not only share what we've learned, but also listen from previous and future episode guests for additional content. Go to patreon.com/thebirddogbabe and $5 per month and you're in. And as always, 2% goes to conservation. Until next week, Bird Dog Babes, keep them versatile.